If you're still looking for a great bird hunting destination this season, then I strongly recommend that you consider one of my favorite places to hunt. That's North Dakota. North Dakota is a bird hunter's paradise. You can hunt waterfowl and upland birds all in the same day. Ducks and geese in the morning, pheasants, sharp-tailed grouse, and Hungarian partridge in the afternoon, or vice versa. North Dakota has a population estimate of 2.9 million breeding ducks, which is 19% above the long-term average, and their prairie pothole region is smack dab in the middle of the central flyway. This year's drought may have had an impact on North Dakota's landscape and some of their bird populations, but there are still regions in the state that have seen an increase in bird numbers this season. Yep, you heard that right. With a little scouting, you just might find yourself in a field surrounded by wild, flushing birds, creating memories that will certainly last you a lifetime. North Dakota has approximately 800,000 acres of private land open to public walk-in hunting. For the latest plots guide, visit the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. Bag your limit this fall in North Dakota. Visit legendarynd.com to start planning your hunting adventure today.
The flush. So fast, it hardly seems real. So vivid, the moment freezes in time before erupting in a blur of spurs and feathers. It's why we changed the way upland loads are built with Prairie Storm. Exclusive flight control FlexWad technology and a mix of copper-plated lead and flight stopper pellets combine to create dense, deadly shot strains through any choke. Longer shots, more power, fewer missed birds. Only from Federal.
Welcome to another episode of the Flush Podcast. I'm Travis Frank. I'm your host, Brandon Morton. To my right is our producer, Brandon. It's good to be back in the room with you. Tony, on my left, Tony Jones, the Reverend Hunter. Fellas, we went hunting yesterday. Brandon, how many times have you gone hunting
in your life?
Yes.
One and a half times.
One and a half. How do you consider half? Was that last year going with Tony?
No, I consider them both 0.75. there's a 0.25, a quarter missing from each one.
Sure. Yep. That I would say you rated it higher than I would. I would have given it 0.25 yesterday. Pheasants don't like water. Why were we hunting in a lake? That's the wrong habitat.
That's Franzen. Scott Franzen brought us to a swamp and said, let's find some pheasants in here. I was like, what the heck?
I know. So normally I get very involved in the scouting process and where we're going to go, or I give recommendations. People ask me for recommendations, you know? But Scott had this spot he wanted to go to.
and he's not here to defend himself.
I know. That's the fun of this. He was supposed to be, but he's not here right now, which means we can really rip him.
Yeah, and I took Brandon out last year for his first time ever hunting.
Yeah,
yep. And we saw a rooster run across a gravel road while we were driving to our next hunting spot. That was the closest we came to a rooster. So we saw a rooster,
sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was like, Brandon, I'm so sorry. You know, next year, I'm going to see if I can wrangle the guys who are TV stars of upland hunting.
Who do this for a living.
Take us out.
Yes.
And then you can shoot a rooster. Because obviously I can't bring you to the roosters. So I thought, this is it, man. This is all we need. All I was a matchmaker yesterday. Mm-hmm. Finding a date and getting you guys
all
on the calendar.
Connecting the dots, the excitement level.
But you guys are going to find the spot. It's going to be a honey hole.
Mm-hmm.
It was a water hole.
It was a hole, for sure. Let's just say I was wishing I had my waiters.
Yeah.
But Brandon, before the hunt, what was going through your mind? Like, was you thinking, this is it? this is my time.
I mean, I didn't know what to think. I mean, it's like with like hunting or fishing or anything, you're taking that chance of not getting something. So I never get my hopes up way too high. Mm-hmm. They were a little bit higher because, you know, the flush guys were with me. So my expectations, and I walk in this office and I see animals everywhere. So I'm thinking like, all right, these guys, they got to show me something. This is what they do. I did see some pheasants, though. I did legitimately see a half a dozen pheasants, maybe, or something like that. One rooster far off in the distance flying away. But I did see some pheasants, and I got to walk through some swampy water and get my feet and pants wet. It was great.
We're in the middle of a drought, too, guys. Did you know that?
Yeah.
It's a drought. And where the heck did that water come from? And actually, when we got out of the field, so I have some buddies that live. We were in western Minnesota yesterday, and I have some buddies that live about an hour and a half south of there, and that's kind of an area that I've been hunting too. But without even me telling him that I was out hunting out in his neck of the woods, he sent me a picture of all his roosters lined up with his buddies, like, limited out by one. Limited out. And I was like, oh my gosh, pouring salt in the wound.
So we must have just gone somewhere that just got a ton of rain recently.
Well, that's what I said. Oh, did you get rain? Did you get a pile of rain? Because I felt like it was, I mean, I don't know. I don't know exactly what happened, but I will tell you that it was miserable walking in the swamp. And my dog, so we had a little bit of a layer of ice in Minnesota, in the Dakotas. And then the last 3 days have been pretty warm and it started to melt. But there's enough ice in the cattails that the rooster or the pheasants could still run across that no problem. I think my dog, she doesn't care. She had to swim to them or whatever to get to them. So my dog goes on point and we're 97 yards, you know, she's 97 yards into the cattails. And your other mentee, I guess we'll call him, Chris, I go, Chris, my dog's on point and I'm going to go in there because she's still a puppy and I don't want to pull her off of a bird. But as I started walking in there, I'm like, this is ridiculous. If you're not a pup, if you weren't a puppy, I'd be pulling you out of there. I'd be saying, get over here. And Chris stepped on a hen on the way in there. That was not the bird that Daisy was pointing. But I am easily 8 inches over the top of my boots and standing in water.
Yeah.
Yes. Every step, I got to that point where I'm like, it doesn't even... You know, normally when you're in cattails, you're kind of like, trying to find that. Is this a higher spot? You know, is this a little bit higher where I'm not going to sink in too far? I just got past that. I'm like, it doesn't matter at this point.
This is something Chris told me on the drive home.
Yeah.
This guy I brought out who's a brand new upland hunter, brand new hunter. I was saying, oh, you should listen to the podcast episode where I have Travis on, the Reverend Hunter. He talks a lot about his faith. He's such a nice guy. I was like, I've never even heard that guy curse. And he said, oh, I heard him curse.
No, ever since. So it's funny because, well, this is, now we're getting sidetracked, but I have interviewed so many people about their dogs and everyone's all about the dog. It's about the dog. And then I'm thinking to myself, what a bunch of hypocrites, because you're all cursing at that dog all day out there in the field. And I've never swore more in my life since I got a dog. I'm serious, you guys. Yeah. My dog has pushed me to the limits so many times. She has changed the hunt for me so many different ways. And you saw, it's like I'm driving a Ferrari out there in the field and I'm trying to like get this thing to do what I want it to do. And she just has this like... Oops, sorry. She just has this like, like you can see this, like she's revving the engine and you can hear her motor going in her nose and everything. And she's just like, oh, I want him. And then when she goes, she just forgets sometimes everything we've worked on. All of the training, the stop sign doesn't mean anything to her. And she proved it again first thing right out of the gate yesterday morning. And I wasn't intending to go this direction, but as long as we're talking about it, I mean, she's hunted with a lot of different dogs this year and a lot of flushing dogs too. And that's just the nature of my job. I know a lot of pointer owners of different pointing dog breeds that don't hunt a pointer with a flusher. Maybe not until, you know, they're really mature and they can handle it. But this competitive nature of my dog has triggered this instinct to get that bird in spite of anybody else in the field. And it's caused her, I think, to flush birds that she's not supposed to flush. She's not, I've told her so many times afterwards, I'm like, Daisy, you are not a flusher. You are a pointer. Stop this. So now I am racking my brain. I've got to go back to the basics. And I did this week again. I'm back to square one in the training. And anyway, I've heard feedback from a lot of listeners, viewers, you know, and a lot of opinions out there too. And some of them have said, you're going to ruin that dog by running her with flushers.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing some of the effects of that. Some of the effects of running a puppy, a pointing puppy, with other flushing dogs because she might go on point and a dog will run in there and flush the bird. My job is to flush the bird in this scenario, not another dog. She sees another dog go in there and she's, oh, I got to get that too. That's what I'm supposed to do. So I'm trying to break that. And anyway, I don't, where did we
well,
even
no,
start
I,
here? I'm in the
let
swamp.
Me just, let I'll me. Say I do... I have a flusher. I have a yellow lab.
Yeah.
And Chris on the drive out was saying, oh, my wife, you know, I'm starting to think about getting a hunting dog. And my wife's been looking and she likes the smaller pointers and blah, blah, blah. And then on the drive home, he was texting his wife, I really think we should get a lab.
Totally.
Well, no,
totally.
I will say this. I've heard the same thing. Mm-hmm. I've heard the same thing. Oh, you can't hunt your pointer with a flusher for the first year or whatever. You'll ruin them. I hunt with mainly pointers. Except for my flusher. And these guys, we don't have that luxury of pulling your dog out of the hunt for the whole first year. You know, they just hunt their pointers. I'll say two things on that. One is I'm so glad to have a flusher, a retriever, because my dog hunting with all these pointers, my dog finds a lot of dead and crippled birds that the pointers quite simply aren't interested in or don't have that drive to go retrieve, find a bird and retrieve it.
They've done their job already. They're moving
on. They've done
on.
Their job.
Yeah.
The other thing is I wonder about this, only because I've only used flushers and I'm totally committed to the lab breed. I sometimes wonder on wild birds, man. I think they run. So I see a lot of false points in the field, and I wonder if that's part of hunting with a pointer. You just, like, I know they're supposed to, and this happens, it seems to me, more with grouse or with a covey of quail or something like that. I think wild roosters run so much, I wonder about if pointers sometimes struggle because they lock up on a point, but then the bird's gone. They're on a scent.
That bird is 200 yards ahead.
Yeah.
In a
so
split
how do
second.
How do you work with your pointer on that? If they're on a point and then you get there, there's like, there's no bird here, buddy. We got to keep moving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Daisy, she'll, and then it's interesting watching the way that, you know, a lot of people have asked, how's she doing this year? And I say, it depends on the day, because it really does. She's had a day a couple weeks ago where on public land, she probably pointed 23, 24 birds. Mm. And I'm not exaggerating. It was awesome. I'm like, yes. And then the next time she ran right through them. Like it was, but she would hit a point and then the bird would move. I'd walk up there and I'd release her and then she'd go up again, lock on it again, and then lock on it again. And it's like she's figuring it out. And I do have to give her a little bit of grace. A lot of people have told me this too, that first year in the field, and even though she's a year and a half, technically she's hunted, this now is her second hunting season, they still say, let her have those mistakes. It's a learning season still. But which is frustrating a little bit too, because I've seen the good. I know what's in there. Mm-hmm. And I've also seen, and I told Brandon yesterday, that tail, that, oh, it's so cute. That's the middle finger when she's on a bird that she's staring back at me, you know, like I'm doing what I want. And, but you know, yesterday you had already left, Tony, but we're working this last little finger of, willows and grass. And all of a sudden, boom, she locks up and she just, there was no doubt about it. Scott was about 70 yards away, and I said, Scott, there's a bird right there, and you just know it. And she didn't budge. I walked right in there, kicked the grass, and beautiful bird flushes right out of it. It was a hen, which is common, but she's still – it's in there. She definitely does it. And those roosters right now, man, we're in a time of the season where they're all just like – what are some famous tricks? Like – Usain Bolt, that's a good comparison to those roosters now. Like they get, they've played the game. We're hunting public land. You know, they're running. It's way different than private land. It's almost like two different species of birds.
I was thinking a lot about that yesterday and trying to explain it to this guy because he's only been hunting, like he's hunted at some preserves and stuff like released birds to just get a feel for the whole hunting thing, you know. And I said, where I hunt, usually there are boundaries around a CRP, like even whether it's private land or walk-in access on private land, but made public through walk-in access, there's an edge, right? Mm-hmm. So if you can push the birds to the edge, they will get up and fly. When you're hunting a huge parcel of public land like we were yesterday, there's no edges. Right. Those birds can just, those roosters can just run.
Yeah.
And that's makes it really tricky, I think. There's nowhere to set up blockers. you're just kind of following your dog's nose, you know.
And to that extent, I would say that people that just go one-on-one with their dog and just walk probably have the best luck.
I know.
You know, yesterday we had Brandon. We had Anna there to take photos of everything, our social media director. Myself, Scott, you, Tony.
And three dogs.
And Chris. And three dogs. And I said on the way out, I told Scott, I'm like, I really, because he showed me on Onyx Maps where he wanted to go. And I was kind of looking at the property and I'm like, if we go through there like an army in a line, it's just, they're just going to run ahead and run around. I was like, our best bet, in my opinion, is just to split up. You know, one person should start on one end of the property, another on the other. And by accident, you push them in and you're going to find birds that'll hold by just knowing, because they can hear your footsteps. They can
They can
feel it. Yes, they know where you are at. They have played the game before. And if you can confuse them by adding different directions, and we almost did it yesterday. You split up. You went to one property. Tony, Brandon, and I and Scott went to a different piece, and once again, wonderfully wet.
Very much.
But you guys, Brandon, you started walking, and you and Scott were on the edge of the cattails, and then there's a field edge, and I don't know if you noticed this, but I walked away from you and you couldn't even see me for a little bit, but I took my dog and we skirted the edge as fast as I could to get around to the backside. And my goal there was just to stop anything from running, because when we first got in on this property, Tony, Hen got up, Daisy went on point shortly after in some cattails, and she just like right into the wind, and she was creeping up. You know, there's a bird in front of her, and I would release her, and she would go. But she didn't want to go far, and she was actually hunting together with us, which is beautiful. And you saw how close we got to some of those birds. Mm-hmm. But they still wanted to get to him. Remember, I told Scott, I'm like, Scott, you need to get to the end, because he was on the edge. I was working through the cattails with her. And that's what's going through my mind. I'm always trying to figure out, how do we stop that runner? Yeah. Because right now we don't have snow, and right now it's just, they can just scream through that cover, and it's really difficult for us to walk through it. You've break through every step. The ice is just thick enough for the birds, not the dog, not for us. But we did get some birds up. We could have shot
some hens.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, my dog flushed two hens. One was in cattails and one was in a willow thicket. Those are the two birds we saw. And then when we split up the second part of the day where we were in two different properties, and this was interesting to be able to show Chris too, there were two fresh kill sites of roosters from probably a coyote or a badger or something that, you know, it didn't look like a raptor, but probably a coyote. So I'm like, well, we're probably not going to find birds if there's coyotes working this public land too.
Yeah.
And there's two, I mean, they were within 50 yards of each other, two dead roosters. I mean, tail feathers and, you know, that kind of thing. So you think, well, there were roosters here, you know, and there are other predators competing with us for the roosters that are here. And that's part of the game.
Right.
Yeah. Brandon, what's your take on walking through that kind of cover yesterday, seeing the birds and just how damn tough they are to get close to?
It was really interesting. I mean, you know, you assume the bird brain sort of bit, like, right, it's a small brain. You wouldn't think it is as smart as it is.
Outsmarted
by it, yeah. And then how fast they are to fly out of that cover impressed me, because the way they fly just looks wonky kind of at first. They're just kind of a weird-looking flying bird to me, you know, an amateur. So the fact that they can get out of that thick cover so fast and just dart off and be gone within a second is crazy to me. But then to learn that they run through that cover made it even more weird for me to find out that, and, you know, again, I'm an amateur, but, like, to watch a bird be able to, like, run is crazy to me. We saw that one last year run across the road. I'm like, all right, the bird's just running. It's not even bothering to use those amazing wings that it has. It's just running across the road.
They'd rather run than fly.
The last resort of a pheasant is to fly.
Yeah, they're not great flyers, and when you butcher your first pheasant, you'll see the muscle around the wing is very small, and a lot of I'm in this camp too. The best meat to eat on a pheasant is the thigh meat.
Yeah,
and it's because they're great runners. Okay. They have really, you know, you see it when you peel off that skin. You look at that leg, that thigh muscle. You're like, oh yeah, they run more than they fly, and their wings aren't that great, but they can fly fast for a short time.
It reminds me of, like, in like a turkey in that sense then, yep. right? Where it'd rather just be on the ground, but it can fly. It can get up in a tree as a sort of very defense similar. Mechanism, yeah. but yeah. it would rather just be on the ground.
Well, I'll bring it back to I'm in the middle of the swamp because that's kind of where swearing. I'll finish it. Swearing. Swearing. No, I don't know if I swore there. I might have. But yeah, I'm walking through and... People probably want to know, did you get anything in that swamp? No, I didn't. I did not. My dog is on point. I release her. She goes forward. She relocks up again. And I'm telling Chris, which, bless him, I cannot believe that he followed me into there. But this is his first time hunting wild birds. And he's like, I just want to see this. He did have a bird flush right at his feet on the way in there. Not the one that we were going for. And unfortunately, that bird escaped in the cattails. It was a huge piece. I don't know, it was probably that particular cattail patch in the middle of that section was probably around 40 acres, I would bet. And once we were in the middle of it, that bird could run so quickly and escape. And I just tell you this story because I think, you know, it sums up what the hunting is right now. It's challenging for a lot of people. Minnesota, Iowa, the Dakotas, we've got really balmy weather for December. This is unseasonable, I would say. We have winter on the way. I looked at the extended forecast. I'm heading up to North Dakota in a couple of days here, and I think I'm hunting snow, which is going to be a nice change of pace. But for right now, those birds are just, they are track stars out there. They're runners, and I've had several people reach out to me even last night saying, hey, how would I'm taking a first time hunter out. They've never shot a bird and I'm going to go, you know, I've looked at Onyx. I've seen some properties out there and he said, I'm going to go out west and then I'm going to drive myself east. And I said, stay there. The birds are there and just try to figure out how to pinch them, how to get a bird pinched down. And it's not, impossible to do that on public land right now, and the birds are still there. It's just the patience and the ability to move locations.
Yeah.
Yesterday, we got to the spot at about 10 a.m. I like to be there by 8:30. I drive around a little bit. I scout. I look at the properties. We got there around 10, and we had to be on the road. You had to leave, Tony, by 1:30.
Yeah.
We had to leave by about 2:30. If I make a trip out there, this is just me. I'm usually there earlier to drive around, especially if I've never hunted somewhere before. I like to just kind of have a little bit of flexibility to make my own judgment game plan. And then most likely, if I'm able, I'm going to stay and hunt the whole day. If I find that I don't like what I'm seeing, I have no problem at all driving an hour away, 2 hours away to get away from what we did yesterday, which was walk through a lot of water. And I don't know where it came from. Yeah. And I talked to my buddy and he said we got about 3/4 of an inch the 2 days before. And that was, you know, a little over an hour south. So they could have gotten more there. Could have been snow melt.
We must have been somewhere where there was just some locally heavy precipitation, like a real downpour or a ton of snow that melted. And I'd say, in addition to what you're saying, you know, I do follow guys on Instagram who just go out alone, and they're like, "Oh, it just went, hit some public land," and like Simon, our mutual friend Simon's always posted like, "Oh, just a little quick afternoon hunt, just shot two." I'm like, "Where are you going, dude?"
Yeah.
But I think this also about the big public land pieces. All those birds we flushed yesterday were in cover. Like, they're not in grass. And even if they're in grass, you're not going to get it. You're not going to pin them down. They're going to run in grass. You're going to run them into the cattails or into a willow thicket or something like that. That's where your dog is finally going to get a flush, I think. I think it'd be really tough to hunt the grass until there's some snow and maybe they can burrow down under a big tuft of grass for some thermal cover. And stuff like that. That's my take.
Yeah, I would mostly agree with that. However, this year with it being so warm, I've been really surprised at how many birds are in that short grass.
But can you hunt that alone, you think, without them running around?
That's why I have that Ferrari in the dog kennel, because she can pin them.
Yeah.
And I've watched her that day when she pointed 23, 24 birds on public land. 19 of them were in that short grass.
Okay.
And, I mean, it's just a guess, 18,
yeah.
19, whatever.
Yeah.
And she pinned a rooster down in grass that was not up to your knee. And I think that's just something about the speed and that ability. And so that's why I know my dog can do it.
Yeah.
And that's why I always take that short grass versus a lab, because your dog is mostly working right in front of you.
That's
picks
right.
up scent. You pick your dog's birdie. Let's go. We got to stay with this dog, you know, and then the bird gets up. Whereas when my dog, when that pointer is on her game, she's flying. Her average speed is 8 or 9 miles an hour that she's moving through that cover, and she picks that up even quite a bit more. And so then she has the ability to kind of fool that bird. She'll pin, point, work it up, point, bird holds. That'll change as soon as we get snow, from my experience out there. That grass now lays down. It's almost like there's no cover there. Then it's almost strictly willows, cattails, and that thicker stuff. But for right now, anybody listening going out this weekend, there's a lot of birds in that thin cover too. So don't abandon it. The best point, and Brandon, we had you walk around the edge of that to get
the end.
Typically
yep.
would be the best shot, and we're waiting for you, and all of a sudden Daisy just locks up, and that was only in a tuft of grass this tall, which was, 2 feet at the most. Besides a bird dog, a shotgun, and a good pair of boots, the Onyx Hunt app is one of the most valuable hunting tools that I take into the field every day. I've been talking about the Onyx Hunt app since we started producing this show, and that's simply because I use it on every single hunt. I'm serious. Every single hunt. Their app tells me everything that I need to know about the lands that I want to hunt and the lands that I can legally hunt on. If you've used it yourself, then you know that the Onyx Hunt app shows your location on planet Earth and clearly lays out the land boundaries. It also tells you information about the type of property you're on, like state land, federal lands, walk-in access properties, etc. It's ideal for scouting before the hunt and during a hunt to help put together the patterns that day. The app also has new features this year that show you the kind of crops that are in fields, which obviously is a big deal for us upland bird hunters. If you hunt grouse in the north woods, there's a timber cut layer to help you find ideal habitat. If you're planning to hunt North Dakota this year, then there's a very important layer that has been added to the app that lets you know if a property has been posted electronically. These are just a few of the tools Onyx Maps give us. And these maps can even be used in areas without cell coverage. From the palm of your hand, Onyx Maps always help you to know where you stand. For generations, bird hunters have hit the field carrying some form of a vest or game pouch on their back. Sometimes the vest rip, tear, and fall apart. Other times they're just downright uncomfortable. That's why Chief Upland designed a vest that's durable, comfortable, and fits your needs. Their new Upland vest is fully customizable to fit the size and shape of all hunters. Plus, you decide where you want to attach your shell pouches and accessories. Birds can be front-loaded into the game pouch and they fit nicely in the back without sagging. That's a big deal because the weight disbursement on your back and shoulders won't tire you out, even with a full pouch of birds. The vest itself is extremely lightweight, weighing only 2.56 pounds. The material is built out of Cordura fabric, which is the same waterproof fabric used in tactical military gear. You can confidently hunt with the Chief Upland vest in some of the world's toughest environments. Order your Chief Upland vest now to make sure that you're ready for your next hunt. Push further and hunt longer with the game-changing vest from Chief Upland, built for your pursuit. If you're like me and you love to hunt, there's a good chance you have a four-legged hunting partner that goes everywhere with you in the field. My dog gives me the best chance at finding birds, which is why I always want to make sure that I'm doing my best to give her food that helps her run at peak performance. I feed Daisy Nutrisource high-performance blends of dog food, which give me the confidence to know that she has all the nutrition that she needs to excel in the field and make it through a rigorous hunting season. Nutrisource dog food comes with their Good for Life system, and that includes four key ingredients that work together to support gut health, heart health, and the overall well-being of our dogs. Take it from me and my dog, Daisy. Nutrisource high-performance dog food can help you and your dog excel in the field. Find the food that's right for your dog at NutrisourcePetFoods.com. Why did you want to go hunting, Brandon?
I've always been kind of curious. One of my first roommates, he hunted everything. So I got to try like a little bit of everything from his hunting trips and stuff like that. So that was always kind of cool. I never did it myself as a kid. Just wasn't done in my family at all that I'm aware of. And then I started working for the Ron Shera a bit, and I started doing all these outdoor shows, and then I just started to hear the way people talked about hunting, and it became different than what I kind of thought it was. Not for all hunters, but for the people that I've worked with, at least, where it's not just a go out and kill them and collect them and eat them sort of a thing. There was more of a thing to it. And then I like the outdoors. It just seemed like a good natural transition for me to figure out something else to do outside besides hiking on the trails or camping or whatever.
Yeah.
So it just seemed like the next natural progression. And I'm curious. I'm curious about my brain or my heart or wherever it is, if it can handle the actual act of hunting. It's the 1.5 times that I've gone, it's been great for me just to get out and walk, be in the elements, whether it be a swamp or not, be a little bit miserable. That's fine. I used to do a paper out when I was a kid. I'm used to being miserable and bad weather.
A paper out is similar to walking in a swamp. Interesting.
It can be at times when you're a kid and whatever, and the weather is terrible. But I'm just curious. And I'm curious, again, like, about my brain to see if I can actually handle it. You know, mm-hmm. I won't know until I actually do it. So we'll see. But it's just curiosity, I guess, more than anything, and wanting to be outside more.
I was so excited for you to have a shot opportunity. And I anticipated that for you yesterday on the drive out. Scott didn't either know that it was going to be that wet. And that really was the ultimate factor in our hunt. We had to pull the plug by 2:00. If things were different, we would have shifted and we would have moved and gone somewhere and continued to go and try to get you that. Even still, I think we probably saw, 8 birds, 9 birds, 10 birds, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, we saw a little bit. And then at the end, like you said, when you flushed that one out and made me move up to the point, I actually had the gun up and had it in my sight, and I hear a hen, and I'm like, cool. Yeah. It was at least cool to get that quick adrenaline rush of just having to pop it up quick. You know, I'm just kind of looking around, waiting for
So when you see this bird come at you, what were you thinking then?
Well, I was waiting to hear. I mean, when I looked at it, it looked to me like a hen. Like, it, from what I've looked at the pictures and stuff, it looked like it. But I was waiting to hear the yell, because you guys said you'd yell what it was.
Yeah.
So I was excited. It was just, you know, excitement running through. And then I'm waiting. I'm doing all the gun safety stuff too, making sure that nobody's around or anywhere near my sight and stuff like that.
That's good for you.
But then I hear hen, just put my gun down, and then that's it. I mean, it's just how it goes. It's like when you're fishing and you got one on the end of the line and it just pops up. You're like, all right, well, I didn't get it.
Was there any adrenaline with that at all?
Yeah. I mean, there was the adrenaline rush of just quick having to react fast and then listen and then do all those things at one time. Yep. But it wore off pretty quick, too, at the same time. Because you're like, well, all right, we'll see if another one comes out. Yeah. Maybe.
Tony, who is the gentleman? We've mentioned Chris several times, but you told me yesterday how you met him. And I was like, well, I got to hire this guy to come over and do some work at my house, too.
Yeah. Yeah, he would do it. His name is Chris Knutson, and he is the owner of Dave Knutson Siding and Knutson Partners Construction, a firm that his dad started.
Okay.
And his dad's a longtime roofer siding guy. And so anyway, I did my COVID project was a big kitchen remodel. And one of the things that we did was we took a window out of the kitchen because we moved all the appliances onto that wall. So the back, I finished it months ago, and it's awesome. We love it, except the back of my house had a big hole in it where there was just plywood where there should be siding. It used to be a window. So I started calling around, like, to people who do hardy plank siding. No, we don't do small jobs. We only do whole houses, blah, blah, blah. And I got a tip from a guy I know. He's like, call that Dave Knutson Siding. They're pretty cool. They work with everybody. So I call him. I get Chris on. He comes out and looks at it. He's like, yeah, I'll do that for sure. So, you know, a couple months later, he's like, okay, I got some guys free. We're done with roofs for the year. Let's do this. Here's the bid. And sent me the price. I'm like, whew, that's not cheap. But, I mean, you know, I get it. It's siding and whatever. So I email him back. I'm like, okay, let's do it whenever. Well, in my signature on my email, we'd only been texting before, but now he sees the signature under my email, which has links, like to the Reverend Hunter website, podcast, whatever. He emails me right back, and he's like, hey, my 7-year-old kid said, Dad, will you take me hunting last week? And I've never been hunting before, and I would love to try it out and see if I like it, see if it's a hobby I want to pursue. So what do you think? You want to barter. You teach me to hunt, and I'll fix the hole in the side of your house.
Nice.
And I was like, nice. Yeah, baby.
Yes.
Like somebody has to pay me to hunt?
Yeah.
Give me a break. So the first thing I did was I took him out to Caribou Gun Club, which is a hunting preserve in Minnesota that's open to the public. And I said, you know, we're going to do this. First, I'm going to give you some gun safety, and then we're going to shoot a round of sporting clays, and then we're going to put 5 birds out in a field. And just what you said yesterday when you were talking to these new hunters, Brandon and Chris, I said, first bird my dog flushes, just watch me. Just watch me shoot the bird. Second bird that flushes, just shoulder your gun. Don't put your finger inside the trigger guard. Just shoulder your gun and swing it. And then whatever remaining birds, and we actually shot a couple scratch birds too. So we got all our birds plus a couple more that were just in that field.
You guys strutted out of that field.
Yeah, no doubt. So that he loved it.
Yeah.
And he ended up joining Wild Wings that's right by his house.
Oh, yeah. Is he North Metro then in Minnesota?
Yeah. Got it. Okay. Bought a shotgun.
Yeah. Well, he had some pretty slick pants yesterday.
He had never worn his brush pants before.
Yep.
He had the brand new orange vest.
Yes.
And, you know, we're driving home, and, you know, we obviously processed that whole day, and, you know, water's not great for pheasants. They don't like being wet, and so they're probably in other spots and other fields, out in the corn, eating corn or whatever. But he loved it, and he's like, I needed that, because whenever I go to the game farm, I shoot birds, obviously. You know, you put them out and you shoot them. But he's like, that's his goal is not to be a game farm hunter. His goal is to be
a real hunter
on wild birds.
Yeah.
And I said, well, man, I want you to come with me to South Dakota next year. And because that's a different experience, too, the way that I hunt in South Dakota. But it was really great. And, you know, Trav, you were a big part of my journey of you didn't go, but you were part of me putting it all together, a elk hunt 2 years ago when I went to Colorado with a camera crew from Ranchero Productions. And I spent 6 days and those with 2 camera guys following me around and never saw a bull elk. And on that 26-hour drive home from southwestern Colorado, I had to do a lot of processing about what is a successful hunt.
Yeah.
And was it a successful hunt even though I didn't shoot an elk? And yes, it was. Like, what is success?
Right.
Success is, I was in Colorado in the San Juan Mountains for 6 days with a dear friend of mine, tracking elk, trying to find an elk, learning how to call an elk, learning about those woods. It was intense, and I learned a ton. And so it was a success,
mm-hmm.
even though I don't have elk meat in my freezer as a result. So I talked to Chris about that too yesterday. Like,
what did he have to say about it? Well, I'll just say too, if you're on social media and you look at, it seems like everybody is successful every time, and I just don't think that's really accurate.
That's right.
Yesterday is accurate, and I'm as determined of a hunter as anybody. Obviously, I marched through waist-high water to go get my dog out of a point yesterday and flush a bird out of there, but the reality is it doesn't always happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't, and I will go and go and go until I run out of daylight. I almost always start at the first shooting hour and end at the last minute of shooting time because I love the hunt, but it's not that way for everybody. Some people didn't grow up doing it. Brandon, you didn't grow up doing it.
Do you
think like these guys are nuts? What the hell are they doing out there? I would never walk out there. Or do you have something inside of you that says, I kind of want to go back and get revenge on it?
Well, I mean, I don't know about the revenge. I want to go back and do it again and just experience it again. You know, the 2 different times I went, 1.5, I went to different places and experienced different things that I walked through. Mm-hmm. And like, it was just different ground.
We had snow last year.
We had a fresh snow. It was just like snow the day before or something like that. So that was different. You know, it was just a completely different environment for it to be in and a completely different setup. This time we had, you know, the 2 different dogs over here, and then we had 2 different dogs with you. It was a completely different experience, but that was cool to me. It just makes me want to go again and then see what else is there. As far as shooting something, I absolutely want to, again, to see what it feels like, but my goal is just to learn about it at first and just to kind of be a part of it and feel about it, because what's the point of wanting to shoot something if I can't handle the trek to get there, right?
Yeah.
So
the journey to get it.
Yeah.
The appreciation for it is probably a lot more than if you went and just picked it up. You know?
I mean, it's like anything else. I went solo camping just a few weeks ago, and I was like 10 degrees, 14 degrees, and I was ill-prepared for sure. And it was kind of miserable, but I still went on my hikes, and I still enjoyed my time. I came back on. It was miserable, but that was awesome. I made it through, you know, that sort of a thing. So it's all about the journey for me, and just it's kind of, again, that mental test to see if I can actually do it. Physically, I know I'm limited to a certain bit, but at least mentally to see if I can push through that barrier. When you become an adult, the barriers you push through are mostly at work, right? Like trying to get ahead, trying to be successful or do the next thing in life to provide for yourself and or your family. So you so rarely have those other things to give you that mental test, that mental fortitude. Mm-hmm. Hunting is one of those things for me that I'm trying to get into for that factor. You know, I want to test myself. I'm 39 years old. I'm a little bit older than most people that start hunting, but that's okay. It's still new to me. It's still a new experience to break through. And I'm sure in a few years I'll find another task that I'm trying to get myself mentally into or mentally get over that hump. So, yeah.
It's interesting, too, at certain points in your life when you try hunting for the first time and then you find success and then you want more of it. Because I remember growing up, that stage for me happened really early in life. I was very young, and then you move to different levels. A lot of people say there's different levels of 100. You want your limit, and you want to appreciate other moments about it. You know, there's it's different for everybody. But, you know, I had pheasant pot pie for dinner last night, you know, and gosh, it was so good, and it's so rewarding because I went out there, I got a bird on public land, I brought it home, my wife cooked it up, and my family just hammered it. They just love it, and to me, it's so rewarding. I have a buddy that he's gotten into hunting in the last year for the first time, and he was successful for the first time, and he had two ducks, and he's like, what do I do now? So we went and prepared them together, and then he had the feast with his family, and I texted him a couple hours later. I said, well, how did it go? And he goes, absolutely awesome, or absolutely delicious, he said. So I think for him, now he's just, there's so much more out there. There's deer, there's elk, you know, Tony, you were out elk hunting, and, you know, so just that whole journey is something pretty special. But if you didn't have it in your life growing up, I think hunting is the hardest thing to get into, harder than sports, harder than, you know, so many other outdoor activities, because what you need to learn. And if somebody's not out there one-on-one, really, you're having a hard time learning. Because I know I'm trying to help a few other people too, and there's just so many questions. And then I tell them, just come with me, because you don't need to have your license yet. You don't need to worry about target practice yet. You need to just come out and sit with me in the deer stand or walk for pheasants, or I just want you to experience it. Just be a sponge for a day and see how it happens. And then, you know, it's one step at a time. So
there's a super high bar. I agree with you. And you see it with Brandon and Chris. I mean, Chris talks quite openly about it, that it's very intimidating to break into the hunting world because I'm an adult onset hunter myself, as we've talked about on this podcast, and you and I have talked about on my podcast too. And it's hard because a lot of people are like, oh, deer camp, it's my grandpa founded it. My dad goes, we go every year with my brothers and my cousins. We have our deer camp. Mm-hmm. Oh, can I come to your deer camp? Nope.
It's
tough to get into a deer camp.
And if you get in, you don't ever want to get kicked out.
Right.
You always do what you can.
With, like, when I pheasant hunt in South Dakota with the same kind of core group of guys. Other guys kind of come in and go out, but we've got a core of four or five of us, and we go every time. We hunt the same spots. We know them like the backs of our hands, and we're very tight. We communicate a lot. It's hard to find that and build that. You know, people ask me all the time, how is it that you hunt private land in South Dakota and don't pay?
Well, you preach at their church.
I preach at their church. I send them Christmas cards. I give their wives flowers. I'm collecting money right now so that for my next trip, I'm bringing one guy an entire case of wine, you know, to thank him because he allows us access onto all these farms. And so you just learn that stuff over time and you build that up, but that's not easy to do. You're right. It's much easier to go online and be like, I want to join a rec volleyball league. Well, that's easy. You just sign up and you show up at the gym yes. and they put you on a team and you're in an adult rec volleyball league or pickup hockey league or something.
Yeah.
Hunting's different. And then you add the extra component of firearms, which a lot of people aren't familiar with.
Intimidation factor there.
It's super intimidating.
Until you pull the trigger and you're like, that is awesome.
It's awesome.
I have never taken a new shooter out that has shot the gun and said anything other than, I want to do it again.
But it's powerful.
It is powerful.
And it's lethal.
It is.
And you're bringing it home like Chris does when he's got little kids and he's putting it in a gun safe and breaking that over-under down, you know, as we saw him do. He still breaks it down.
I know. We got Chris, we're going to another spot, and he's taking his gun apart.
That's what the kid, And he's like, he told me, he said, it just feels safer to me.
Yeah.
When I break it down and put it back in that hard case that I bought it in, and then I go home and put it in the safe with a trigger lock on it. Like, that guy is, you know, he's new to guns. He's new to firearms.
That's great.
And so I said, don't ever lose that. The first time I took him out, I said, don't ever lose that fear of firearms. Because guys do, they swing them around like they're another arm or something. And I tell them all the stuff like, you'll see all the guys I hunt with, if we are shooting auto loaders, we all, as we're walking back to the truck, we unload the breech and we put that shell in sideways, you know, at a right angle. So you can see a shell sticking out. And no, that's not a live fire weapon. All the guys break open their over-unders side by sides, not a live fire weapon. So that kind of stuff. Yeah, you think you start listing it out, you realize it's a lot to get into hunting, man. It's a lot.
And that's why we're talking about this today, because I think it's important. And just to wrap this whole thing up, the value of the time you've invested in with Brandon, with Chris, with other hunters is so important.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of organizations that are out there and they're doing their very best. They have youth hunts, they have women's hunts, they have other hunts for other people too.
That's what I was going to say, is there's that inclusive part. The intimidating for me is guns, because I didn't grow up with guns. That's intimidating to lay off the bat. What's intimidating for a guy like me is I'm a city dude, right? Mm-hmm. I got long hair. I've got tattoos. So, like, it's intimidating for me to go into a gun shop or a Bass Pro shop or a Cabela's even, because, you know, I wear the flannel bit, but I don't necessarily fit in with, quote unquote, and I say this as your typical stereotypical hunter.
You got a beard, though.
I do have a beard, but, you know, it's a trendy, whatever. The thing is, though, but, like, from my background and from my friends and stuff like that, it's a completely different world than hunting. So it's intimidating from the social aspect too of going into hunting. If I didn't know you guys, if I didn't work with you guys, this chance probably wouldn't have happened, right? Yeah. Like, I probably wouldn't have just walked up to some dude in camo and be like, "Want to take me hunting?" Yeah. Like, it just doesn't work that way. So there needs to be more things where you get more people that wouldn't be in hunting involved. Urban people, anybody that men or women, children, just like that, because it's intimidating for someone that has no, like, connection to the hunting world, just to go, like, I'm kind of curious about hunting, but what do I do?
Chris said the same thing, Brandon, yesterday on the drive out. He said, meeting you and now meeting these guys, you're just not what I thought hunters were like. And his stereotype of hunters was not positive.
Really?
Yeah.
And what I said,
I said, well, upland hunters are the finest of hunters. That's what I said. And this is the right podcast to say that, right?
I think you people are fist pumping right now, but I don't know if that's necessarily accurate.
It might not be accurate, but I do think, and I said, there are guys who deer hunt, there are guys who do other kind of hunting who are, you know, there's good and bad in all versions. But I did say, like, when you're with upland hunters, there are two things I think that set upland hunters apart a little bit from big game hunters. No one's hunting for the meat. Right? I mean, we eat the pheasant.
I enjoyed my pot pie.
I love it. I love it. But we're not doing it to fill the freezer. Because if you do the cost-benefit analysis on that.
Exactly. It's like $800 a pound.
Per pheasant. Okay. And I said the other thing is, for most upland hunters, the dog work is so
all about
important.
The dogs, Tony. Right?
It's all about it is. I love my dog. And it's like... Yeah, so those two things do. Upland hunting is different from some other forms of hunting.
Yeah,
because I mean, there's dog work in waterfowl hunting, of course, and there's, you know, there's other parts about deer hunting, about this, you know, all the planning and the trail cameras and like this and that and the deer camp and the traditions. Each type of hunting has its own thing. I'm just saying, what is it about upland hunting that makes it my favorite part of hunting? Well, the dog work. And also, it's a challenge to shoot a moving object.
Yep.
And I love
that. To get close enough to him as
well. And I love that. I love the challenge of shooting, of I mean, you guys, when you named it, it was brilliant because it's the flush. That it's the adrenaline of at the flush that just makes it.
Yeah, it's amazing. We talked about this too, and just how powerful that bird, how much they must compress their bodies to erupt. Because I can barely get my legs through that thick cattails, the thickest cover, and that's where they're hiding. And then they just come exploding out of it. And
I hunt with a guy named Larry Kramer out in South Dakota a lot. And he and I, he's a 77-year-old guy, and he's been hunting for decades. And this year we were hunting a field outside of Huron, and we were just walking through some really tall grass. And a rooster, an old rooster, got up and cackled. And he cackles and goes straight up. It's like you guys would have wanted for the TV show.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a perfectly like photogenic moment. It cackles. It goes straight up. I shoot it. It drops. My dog retrieves it to hand. And Larry, who's been hunting for decades, said, that just made my season for me. Watching that happen. He didn't even fire a shot. Watching that happen, that just made my season.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's it. That's the flush, man. I love it.
Brandon, you're going to have to come back because it didn't happen yet.
Because hens don't cackle.
Hens don't cackle.
I will be back. I will be back for sure. Yeah. I mean, nothing that happened, the water or whatever, or not even, you know, getting anything or not even firing, that didn't dissuade me from doing it. I still want to do it. Chasing that dragon, man. I'm just gonna go for it until I get it.
So. And I think to be honest, guys, now that we've all experienced it together, we learned a valuable lesson yesterday.
Don't let Scott pick the
spot. Don't let Scott pick the spot. Yeah. Yes,
maybe
exactly.
Check the ground conditions.
I learned that yesterday.
I am going to choose the next location that we hunt from. Tony, last question. We'll wrap this up. You've been in South Dakota several times, and you've been hunting out there for many, many years. What would you say if you had to give it a grade compared to other years, where is it at?
Man, I'd give it a BB plus, something like that.
Yes. Yeah.
We've had days where we've shot 5 and 6 man limits. Now, it's not like people, remember the old days? We shot our limit by noon and
exactly.
We were back watching college football. And I say to them, I didn't come to South Dakota to sit in a crappy motel room.
Yeah.
I came out here to hunt.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
So I want to work all day for a limit.
Yeah.
We've had other days where we have maybe shot half a limit. We've not been skunked. I have had days in South Dakota where I've been skunked. Not this year. We've shot birds every day we've been out there. I've had 3 trips, 4 days each, and I've got one more coming up. I will say, as always, and Trav, you know this better than anybody, it's all about habitat.
Yeah.
And I hunt farms where landowners care about habitat. So it's CRP that's been in CRP for years. So it's grown up thick. The birds know it and love it. And we know how to hunt it. We'll have 4 pushers with dogs and 2 blockers and work into the wind. I mean, we have it down, you know. So that's, I think, part of our success is a combination of great habitat. And I think we're good hunters. Like, we think about it. We talk about it. We have a plan. We stick to the plan. We know each other well. So, yeah, man, it's my favorite type of hunting.
Yeah. And last thing, Brandon, for you, 2.5 hours in a vehicle one way, 2.5 hours on the way back. There's just the laughter, the camaraderie, the fun. And Scott, you know, we give him grief on the show, but we gave it to him yesterday too.
Yeah, absolutely. On the way back, for sure. Yeah, no, that's the fun part about any of this, right, is the people that you're with too. It's the conversations, whether you come out with like the best hunt of the day or the worst, you still have something to talk about at the end of the day.
Yep.
Sometimes commiserating is the best way to bond with somebody in the long run of life anyway. So
yeah, I mean, there's something about 4 of us riding back in a vehicle and everybody had wet feet for 2.5 hours all the way back home. Next week, I am going to be in North Dakota. I cannot wait. It has been way too long since I've walked out there. I am going to make sure my dog comes back a rock star champion. I have no doubts in her, but we will record a podcast in North Dakota, and it's a bit of a road trip. We're filming another episode out there. I'm looking forward to it. There's snow in the forecast. That means hopefully Usain Bolt. Did I say that right? Did I pronounce it?
Yeah, that's right.
Isn't out in the field in the form of a rooster running from us, but holding tight. I will tell you all about it next week. Tony, thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
Brandon, thanks for doing the producing as always and being willing to walk through water with us.
It's my pleasure.
And chase birds. We will do it again. And thank you all for joining us today. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Flush Podcast. I'm Travis Frank, reminding you to take the time to introduce someone new to the field.